Welcome to the seminar of the New South Wales Adult Literacy and Numeracy Council. I'm Kate Roscoe, I'm the current president of the New South Wales Council. I'd like to acknowledge that the traditional owners, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, on whose land we are holding this meeting and seminar, and pay our respects to elders past and present. This evening we have the pleasure of Irene Sheehan, who I think many of you would know, has been working in the WELL program, the Workplace English Language and Literacy and Numeracy.
And Numeracy, definitely, yes.
Program for many years, and she's here to share her wisdom, experience, expertise and knowledge with us. I think she's been working at Granville TAFE for many years.
I have, yes.
As head teacher, and now I think at the moment she's working in the marketing.
Marketing WELL, yes.
The WELL program.
To industry, trying to bring the work into TAFE. So.
So I'm sure we'll hear lots of interesting, she'll share lots of interesting experiences and we'll get lots of insights from Irene, so thank you, Irene.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming. I've heard that it's pouring outside, so, and you've had a long day, so yeah, you're very good. okay, so I've been involved in workplace delivery, I suppose, for about 16 years now, and workplace English language and literacy is one part of our practice as LLN practitioners, and I sort of fell into it about 15 years ago, when TAFE started moving into WELL programs. I think before TAFE, the funding, Workplace English Language and Literacy, has been around since about 1991, but TAFE started moving into it, I think, in the mid-90s. So I've been involved in workplace delivery, I was counting up the years on the train, I think that's about 15 or 16 years, and really, it's my passion. It really is my passion. The majority of my program, besides being a head teacher, I am a head teacher, but the majority of my program has been delivering language, literacy and numeracy programs in industry, in the workplace. So I know in this room tonight, I'm not the only WELL or workplace LLN practitioners. I can look around the room and I know that many of you have been involved in LLN. So I really don't want to stand up as the expert tonight. The seminar is an overview of workplace delivery. I see it as an opportunity to share ideas with other workplace practitioners who are here tonight, and just to promote a bit of discussion about workplace delivery, because as part of our practice, I suppose it's becoming more and more important. Whatever institute you are, whether it's TAFE or a private RTO, as an LLN practitioner, our core funds are shrinking. We're looking outside of that to bring in other forms of funding so we can deliver our practice. As most of you know, many RTOs missed out on the LLNP contract, which has just come through. To most RTOs that practice LLN, has become a very important source of funding, and particularly to TAFE. So in the next years, workplace LLN practice, those skills are very important. Okay, so I just want to promote a bit of discussion first of all. Then I'm going to drop you into some workplace scenarios and get you to work in small groups and to use that wonderful language literacy numeracy knowledge that you have to come up with some solutions to the scenarios. Then, because it's a seminar, I'm giving you just an overview of workplace delivery with the PowerPoint, because it wouldn't be a seminar if I wasn't showing the PowerPoint. And then finally, we'll just open up to any more discussions or questions that you may have. And please just jump in as I'm talking. If you've got any questions, just ask. So we'll just look at one or two questions, and I'm just going to throw them at you very quickly, I suppose to get a bit of a brainstorm, to set the scene about what we're talking about tonight. So I'm just trying to work out how far I can step out without appearing on the screen. So first of all, what is workplace language literacy numeracy delivery? Just throw some answers at me.
Classes on the factory floor.
Could be. Classes on the factory floor.
It's training tailored to meet specific needs.
It's very good. Yeah, training that's tailored to suit specific industry needs. Anything else? Okay, well, we're just going to move on because we're just promoting a discussion about workplace delivery. So who here has been involved in delivering an industry? Okay. So let's... a bit of a sharing of ideas. So kind of what companies, what if you don't want to name the company, what sort of industry? Have you worked with training packages? Mickey, I know you're involved.
Well, at the moment we're doing aged care, a lot of with aged care. So been working mainly with what they call hotel services, which is cleaners, laundry, kitchen staff. So we've been looking at policies and procedures and also infection control and
okay, that's great.
Different, yeah.
Thank you. Anyone else, Julie?
We did a big project when Well first started in Tafe, which was a long time ago now, in the printing industry.
Okay. Anyone else?
It's involved in one for Country Energy that was through the New South Wales at the March on process.
Oh, okay. I heard about that project. That was an enormous project, wasn't it? Yes. Yeah.
Out of Dublin.
Okay. Anyone else involved in workplace delivery at all?
I did one many years ago, writing their standard operating procedures in plain English, which had never been written before.
Okay. And what industry was that?
In the printing industry.
Okay. Anyone else like to add to that?
I'm currently working with workplace assessors, looking at making sure that they don't do, when they're doing recognition, that they don't make the demands higher than what the LLM in the unit is.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a unit?
In units of competency, mm-hmm. when you're doing recognition, not to actually set up recognition tasks that
a higher length
of unit.
Mm-hmm.
Not actually doing
workplace
delivery, but
working with workplace. Okay. So the next question, how might you be involved in workplace LLM delivery? Well, I'm going to answer that myself. There is funding around WELL funding, Workplace English Language and Literacy, which I'll talk about a bit more. So that's quite likely how you'll be involved in workplace industry. Sometimes an organisation rings up TAFE or another RTO and is prepared to pay money for some literacy issue in their company, and they don't go through WELL funding. So what are the differences between workplace and college LLM delivery? Any ideas?
Well, who you're accountable to, your stakeholders, you've got having to deal constantly with company managers and sort of, because it's customised, there's a lot of difference really, and you're having to go, normally it's off-site or on-site where the workplace is, so sometimes you don't have a room, but sometimes you don't have a chair. Yeah, so that you may have sort of people that you have to train and do some interesting news, and you have to find somewhere to park yourself. So there's a lot of differences.
Yeah, and we'll go into some of those will come out as we talk about it more tonight. So what Mickey was saying though was that the learning environment, the actual room, may look very, very different. And who you're reporting to. You're talking about reporting to your stakeholders. So
right.
that can be managers. You're having to communicate with managers.
And
DWA,
I think.
And DWA also, yes. Oh. Okay, so this is sort of touching on why there is funding for WELP programs. So the question is, how has the Australian workplace changed in the last 30 years, and what sort of factors are influencing these changes? So just from your own knowledge, how do you think industry may have changed over the last 30 years?
Technology?
Globalisation, yes.
More compliance.
Most industries are very compliant.
OHS.
Work cover.
Multicultural workforce.
Very good, multicultural workforce. Very lean manufacturing environment. Everything is lean manufacturing. Any bit of fat that was ever around an industry has been trimmed off.
Casualisation.
Okay, casualisation. The need to be multi-skilled. Once an operator may have worked the same machine for 20 years, that kind of doesn't happen these days. All right. So how do you think low-level LLN skills might affect workers?
Stay casual and don't get a permanent position for promotions.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They have trouble.
There's a risk of meeting the RHMS regulations and guidelines. In the long run, they can injure themselves by not be proficient with LLN skills.
Okay. It can lead to RHMS issues.
Yeah.
Someone else here saying something?
It can affect outputs from the organisation too, so if they can't read the instructions, they don't have how much needs to put in the pie, they end up with rejects at the end.
Okay. Yes. All right. So what LLN skills are required in today's workplaces? Just a general question. Okay, reading? Reading
screens as opposed to print on paper.
Okay,
yeah,
yes, so technology, very big part of work. We don't have to come up with all the answers, it's really just throwing questions at you to set the mood, really. Okay, so why is there a need for workplace LLN training? Maybe answers itself, really, kind of through the things that we've talked about. So what skills and knowledge do LLN specialists or practitioners need to provide training in the workplace? So as an LLN practitioner, what skills and knowledge do I need that I may not need to work at the college level? I say LLN practitioners got 80% of their skills and knowledge. A good LLN practitioner, what they need to build is the other 20%. What do you think the most important one is?
Communication skills.
Okay, communication skills, very high.
Which you need in the classroom as well. You do, but you've got to be able to deal with people from a whole different levels of management, really, and be prepared for what may that. You know, it's just not the structured, so you've got to be able to deal with a lot of unstructured sort of time working and
so being flexible, incredibly flexible.
Well, I think an LLN specialist in the classroom has to be flexible too,
yeah.
But it's got to possibly a little bit more flexibility even though willing to. The unknown.
You need
not knowing what the known is, going out and not knowing what the day may bring, really.
I think you need to be sensitive to the culture of the workplace.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they're different, in different workplaces are different, and you've got to really pick up on the culture of the workplace and the way the workplace might be easily functions.
Absolutely. I say generally there's a sameness about workplace. If you do workplace delivery, there's a certain sameness, there's a certain things that are the same in every workplace, but then every workplace is specific as well. Janet, were you going to add something there? Thank you. All right, we're going to move on. I'm going to drop you into some workplace scenarios, and I'd like you just to spend about 5 minutes in twos and threes, just having a chat and maybe writing down a few ideas. And you can approach it maybe one of two ways. There's a workplace issue, and some of these issues are quite common. Maybe you can approach it from what LLN may sit behind the issue, or maybe you want to take one step further and say what you would do as a practitioner to try and meet these needs.
Okay.
Please do it in groups.
Yes.
Take one each. You may want might be useful to you to have these scenarios. Just move quickly on each issue, because about 4 or 5 minutes in total. So the first one is, the issue is there's a long lead in time between the machine faults occurring and the machines being repaired. What LLN issues could sit behind that? Okay, so the first one, the scenario is there's a long lead in time between machine faults occurring and the machine being repaired. So what could think in language literacy terms, what could sit behind that? Why would that happen? Why could it happen? Okay, maybe people don't know the procedure of reporting. Maybe they don't have the English communication to be able to say what has happened. Maybe they need to pick up a telephone and ring maintenance, but they are not confident to do that.
Worse, they have to download a form off a computer they don't know how to operate, with words that they can't read and write in lit sentences that they can't construct.
Very good.
I don't know.
of information you don't know there. So, yeah.
Not sure where it's getting at. Just move on, Mickey. I could tell you the answer.
I have an answer, but
it's just really to promote together as a whole group. Don't worry if you haven't got right to the end. Okay. Scenarios are really just throwing a bit of information or an idea at you, and you haven't really got all the information. But if you were in industry and you were, someone was telling you that this was the situation, you'd be asking a lot more questions and you'd get a more of a feel what sits behind that scenario. But the reason why I gave you these scenarios is if when you go into industry and you begin those conversations with your stakeholders, whoever you're talking to, this is the beginning of your training needs analysis. This is the beginning of your program. This is the starting point. These are the sorts of things you talk about. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the first one, long lead in time between breakdown and machine being fixed. We said briefly, maybe, well, we heard a really good answer over here, but maybe it's as simple as the person is not confident about picking up the phone, or maybe they can pick up the phone but they cannot express themselves clearly to maintenance at the other end. Maybe that's what the situation is, so you would ask more questions around that, and that kind of thing happens all the time. Alright, so the wrong types of corners being sewn on curtains in a small curtain manufacturing factory, what could it be? Kayla, what's one thing it could be?
Read the diagram that describes what needs to be done.
Okay. And maybe that person, because often there's a lot of issues that sit behind a situation like that. Maybe the person doesn't like to say because then they might show that they can't do their job, etc., etc. Maybe they just quickly show it to the person beside them and says, you know, what does this mean? And the other person has not been doing the work, so they don't really care. Okay, so the patient care record ratings are too low for the amount of care being given in an aged care facility. So there's a worker working with their clients or their patients a lot more than what's being recorded. What could be behind that?
Lack of knowledge in medical terminology.
Okay.
It's lacking the skills to write.
So number four, I just threw this one in. Imminent loss of key supervisors over the shift or a change to a new textile processing plant. So these new supervisors know that aren't going to get a job. What could be behind that? Quite likely, yes, in a new textile place. Anything else?
Okay, wastage in cardboard packaging manufacturing process unacceptably high. Because in industry, wastage is always a really, really big thing. Wastage has got a dollar amount attached to it, and if you can go into a company and they're telling you about wastage, and you can work out the reason why wastage is so high, and if there's a literacy thing behind it, I tell you what, you'll be there for a long time. They will see the value in you. So, what could that be? What language literacy numeracy could be behind that?
Lack of numeracy skills.
Yeah. Okay.
Not getting the most out of the material.
Exactly right. Sick leave rate is unacceptably high in small cabinet makers workshop. This may have nothing to do with LLN at all.
Yeah.
Any ideas?
Conflict with management. Conflict resolution. Stop talking with workshop.
But it is a language issue in being able to express whatever grievance you might have with the workplace conditions.
Exactly right. Thank you. High accident rate at a steel foundry. Could be that, but it could be lots of other things as well. Inability to find enough employees ready to do their forklift training. And I've seen this lots of times in industry.
Fear.
Yeah, and that forklift license is very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and often it can be written, and sometimes whoever's doing it will do it orally, but that's very difficult as well, because they need to be able to express the answers. Okay, well, we'll move on from that. The page is here. So really, I'm just going to talk you through some things now. So, what exactly is WELL? Well, it's amazing how often I say that word. WELL is federal government funding for LLN programs to be delivered in the workplace. And in industry, I very seldomly talk about language literacy, because industry is not interested in hearing those words particularly. If you talk communication, it's received much better. Because if you're talking to industry and you're talking about language and literacy, they'll go, well, everyone can speak. They will often say everyone can speak, everyone can read and write. They wouldn't really know often. You talk communication and every company will say they have communication issues. Do we have communication issues in our own workplace? So talk communication, and it's a language industry understand. So that funding is applied for through DEWA. And usually in New South Wales, it's the company that applies for the funding, puts in the submission, but it can actually be the company or it can be the RTO. But either way, it's a partnership between an RTO and a company. WELL funding for a company is usually 3 years. Sometimes it is more. And it's really good value, because in year one of the program, it is funded 75%. So the company only has to pay 25%. So it's actually very cheap training. Years two and three are 50% funded. So how it might work is there's an LLN teacher in an organisation, either a certain number of days a week and for a certain number of weeks a year. A smallish program would be 1 day a week, a teacher on site 1 day a week. A large program is four or five days a week. And usually it's for 40 weeks a year. Which needs to be started and completed in a 12-month period. If you've got any questions, please ask. So I'm just going to move on. Otherwise, look, I just want to talk a little bit about my own experiences because it brings it more into a context for you, I think, if I talk about industries. And can I say, if you're working in an industry, there's a confidential element. Every industry I work with, I ask if I can use their logo and I ask if I can talk about their company. Because if you work in a company, even one day a week for a year, you know a lot about that organisation. You know all their secrets, basically. So I fell into workplace delivery I think it was 1996, at a company called Amoco Australia, and they make carpet backing. They belong to the textile, clothing and footwear industry because it involved weaving. So what it was extrusion of plastic product, and that product was woven into carpet backing. They were at Liverpool. I was there one day a week for 3 years, and I finished there and the company closed down. They actually moved offshore to China, like a lot of the textile industry has moved offshore. After that, I was at Heatcraft. Heatcraft are Kirby's. Have you heard of Kirby's? They are an Australian family company that were started making fridges about a long time ago, 50, 60 years ago. And I was there for 3 years, a very large program, 2 days a week. And while they were a family company, Kirby were a family company, and while I was there, they were bought over by a large American company. So there was a lot of change of culture in the time that I was there, and I suppose I worked a lot with changing, bringing in the new culture, basically. I worked in Tasman, Australia for 1 year, and that's the glass wool industry, so pink bats. And I have to say, it's probably the only workplace program I haven't really enjoyed because of the physical environment I was working in. You know, you think pink bats, walk into that company and all those fibres floating around the air, and my eyes would start itching. And the worrying thing was, after about 6 months, my eyes didn't itch anymore. So I don't know what was happening to my body. So that was a one-year program. It was a very difficult program because the stakeholders were never on board. What actually often happens in workplace delivery is one person wants it, maybe an HR person, maybe a production person. They want the program. You get a well program and that person leaves. And then it's, why not, you know, why are you here? No one wants you. So unless you can engage those stakeholders, you actually haven't got a program. At the end of the year, they sort of looked at us and we looked at them and said, oh, look, you know, it's great. We'll end it here. Thank you very much. And they kind of thought the same thing. And yeah. ALS, Australian Laboratory Services, they do the testing of water and soil. They're at Wellen Park. That was a difficult program too because it was a failed program, someone else's failed program, and I was asked to come in and try and rescue it. And I will say this, you only get one shot at a workplace. If you can't make it work, they're really not interested in picking it up. So I went there to try and rescue this program. They did to a certain extent, but to me, the success of the program is repeat business. It went the year and didn't go any further. I worked at Sony. That was pretty groovy. It was really, really groovy. Not in a well program, but I delivered certificate for them there. They did go on to have a well program. It was a very fascinating industry. I loved it. what they did is make the CDs. Sony's make the CDs. They do the graphics for the CD and press the CDs. It was great. Baxter Healthcare, I started there in 2001 and I'm still there now. So I've had a relationship there for 11 years. What Baxter do, the pharmaceutical manufacturing industry, what they do is if you're in hospital with attached to an IV bag, if you look up at that bag, it will be a Baxter bag because Baxter have the share of the market in this part of the world. So what they do is they make the IV bag and they fill it with solution, the product that is going into your arm when you're in hospital. They also do chemotherapy, fill it with chemotherapy. They have a pharmacy on site. They fill it with chemotherapy product and nutrition product as well for babies. Wonderful company. They started as a 3-year well program, very large program, 4 days a week. So I started there in 2001. Then they continued with a commercial program up until last year when they were eligible for another well funding again. So we've got a large well program there again. So yeah, I've been going there for 11 years, so I almost feel more comfortable there than going to Cape. Almost. Wonderful company, very incredible standards. They come under the Therapeutic Goods Association, the TGA. So everything comes under GMP, Good Manufacturing Practice. So standards for everything is very, very high, because a pharmaceutical company can be shut down overnight by the Therapeutic Goods Association, TGA. As you might remember, is it Seoul, a company Seoul, a few years ago. Another program we've got is a large program we've got, and we've been there since 2002, is Brady, Brady Australia, and they make safety signs. And we're a bit fortunate with them because it's the one company, but they have different companies operating under the one name, Brady. So we've been able to roll over well programs 3 years, 3 years. Brady have had 3 years, Accidental have had 3 years, Carol have had 3 years, and we had a program in Western Australia, safety signs, that we ran from here, which was rather difficult. but it was fun going to Perth to quality assure that program. I've been involved in Scalabrini villages. They had a 3-year well program starting in 2004, paid commercial for a number of, they're still, you can go more than the 3 years. They're actually into their 5th year of well funding if you put up a good enough case. So that's the aged care industry. So just a little snapshot of that. So how do you do a workplace program? So when a trainer if you're working in industry, you're often called a trainer, so that actually pops out of my mouth, whereas some people don't like that word, they're an LLM teacher, but in industry, the word trainer, people are probably more open to the word trainer than the teacher, the TAFE teacher. A lot of your participants have their own attitudes about the word, teacher. The word LLM trainer is used quite frequently in industry. So how it would start, that there would have been an application, it would have gone to DWA, that application would have been approved. If you were the teacher, probably the first thing you would do is read the application and build your knowledge of the company. So build your knowledge of the company profile. Then you would go to the industry. You'd probably go with your head teacher, and you would meet the key stakeholders who are going to be in charge of the well program. That's usually a person from production or a person from HR. You would meet with that person and would start your initial conversations. How do you want the program to go, etc., etc. What day of the week do you want me there? It's 2 days a week, blah, blah, blah. What days it work well for the company? Monday and Friday are often not good days because of production on those days. You would ask for an orientation of the company, because you need to be able to move for OH&S issues and other issues. You need to be able to move around the company. And you would start your program saying that you need to, yes, there's a submission written, but the submission is always very general. You would need to go into the company and say, my first weeks, 3 weeks or whatever it needs to be, I need to be doing a thorough training needs analysis. And the industry changes all the time, needs change all the time, and you need to be reviewing what you're doing. I would say minimum every 6 months, if not beforehand. I go around that process and do another training needs analysis. And I think that's why our programs are successful, is that we're all the time just trying to tap into exactly what the organisation wants. So how would you do a training needs analysis? What kind of things would you look at? You would, by talking to people, by walking around, by looking, you would identify the types of communication that occur in the workplace. And as you, so emails, reading, writing, safe operating practices, and as you're doing that, you'd be gathering all those things, gathering some examples of the emails. And then you'd be identifying the communication skills that the employees need. What do they do? What kind of documentation do they need? What do they write? Do they attend meetings? Do they need to understand minutes? Do they need to be able to write minutes? How much of it is computer? Computer is really big in industry, really, really big in industry. And a very common thing that comes up all the time is giving and receiving the message, because organisations run on a person being able to say what is happening, the other person listening, being able to say clearly what is happening, the other person listening and understanding. And I find that is a big one, getting and receiving the message. It is so basic, but once you start talking to organisations about that, they go, people always say, I told him what to do, but he didn't know, it's his fault, he didn't do it, I told him. So that just very basic thing of giving and receiving the message. So when you've got a good knowledge of what is happening, then identifying where the problems occur and the cause of the problems. So is it their lack of a person's skills, their language literacy, numeracy skills? Or sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes it's how the document is written, how the document is designed. So you may be working at that end with the company. And when you've got this all together and I document it very professionally and systematically, then I sit down with the stakeholders and say, these are the things, this is what your well submission says, these are the things that I've uncovered in the training needs analysis. Yes, some of them are the same as the well submission, so that's good, because we've got to be working to what's on the application. But then we start nutting out a program, and then the stakeholders or the company, they prioritise what they want you to work on. And you start putting time frames, who that involves, how you would get those people, because that's another logistics nightmare, and then the time frames that you might work on whatever needs to be worked on. So I put all these things under challenges, because as much as I love workplace delivery, it's a little bit like what Mickey was saying, and you sort of go in every day and it's a bit of a challenge. So identifying the well participants, I really go through that training needs a process, report back to the stakeholders. For me, the stakeholders identify who's in the program. Okay, we're going to be working with leading hands, and the leading hand really doesn't have much choice about whether they are in the program or not. I think in the old days of well, when we first started, a notice was put up on the notice board, do you want to come to English classes, blah, 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 because I'm the nice lady, I'm the good fairy who's here. One morning a week, come and join my classes. But for me, and for industry who are paying for it, it's really not about that. Though there is the element that there's two sides to it. It's what the industry gets out of it, and it's also what the individual then gets out of it as well. So, of course, trying to group people together is very difficult, because often people can't be released off the floor, or the same people with the same issues can't be released at the same time because they both do the same job. I find a lot of delivery is one-to-one. It's a real bonus if you can get a group together. You can have the employees on site. Once your target group's identified, you need to interview them, because you're reporting, your first report is 3 months, and you need to say how many your participants, you need to say what level they are on the macro skills of the ACSF. So you need to interview and assess each employee against the ACSF quite early on in the program. Previously, you didn't have to report until the end against the national reporting system. At the end of 12 months, you put your numbers in then, but now you're required to do it 3 months, so you need to go through that process. As far as getting employees, I find that if you don't engage that middle management, I've called them supervisors here, but they can be, you know, whatever they're called in the company, frontline managers or whatever. They're the ones that you really need to get on site, because the people, the stakeholders at the top might say, yes, you can have all the leading hands. You can have all the leading hands for your training. The leading hands say, good, I'm going to be there. But it's the level in the middle who make the decisions about production or whatever's happening, that you really need to engage them. Or you'll find that if you're in a training room, you're sitting in that training room waiting for them to come, and no one comes because they're busy doing what they should be doing. So you're dealing with complex work environments like rosters, roster days off, all those sorts of things. And at the end of the day, production comes first. Whatever the company is, their core business comes first. Their core business isn't education, it isn't training. So you know that's what you need to understand, or where you need to come from. The first one, diversity of learning groups. Well, as LLM practitioners, we always have that. Can I say company politics is a really big thing, because you go into an industry and very, very soon you're caught up with everyone's politics. Everyone's got politics, you know, from the top to the bottom. Everyone's telling you about what's happening and how bad the place is, and, you know, this and how badly they're treated or not treated. And you hear it all, but you need to be able to really separate yourself from that. You know, listen to it all, but don't ever use that in any way. And you have to be really careful reporting back to stakeholders about employees. I never say anything negative to stakeholders about employees, because that could be a person's job, and there's just no way that I can be responsible for that in any shape or form. So I actually never say bad things about people that I'm working with. I may cloak it in another way, but never. The production will always come first over training. And the other thing that's really difficult is, whatever organisation you're working for, TAFE, you have to make TAFE fit the workplace. You still have enrolments. You still have to mark attendance. You still have plans. You still have to assess. You still have to do all those things. But you need to do them in a really creative way that fits into the company, because when it comes to assessment tasks, and it's our requirements under the AQPF that we assess, there's no way that you can be giving an employer, this is the assessment task. So the assessment task has to be something that meets the requirements of the unit, but is something that they would be doing anyhow. Has anyone got any questions or comments? Yes.
Plans?
What organisation do you work for?
Oh, I don't. I'm a student.
Oh, okay, you're a student. If you're working in TAFE, that's our electronic roll book system, is plans. Okay.
And ACSF?
Okay, well, Australian Core Skills Framework. The Australian Core Skills Framework is what language literacy, numeracy is measured against, what level. And I'm sure you'll learn more about it in your course.
Yeah.
So I think to be a workplace trainer, you need to be incredible flexible. There's no use. You need to be prepared to go in at different sorts of hours. At my first workplace, every second week, I used to work from 11 o'clock at night till 3 o'clock in the morning to meet the night shift. I don't actually do that now. But like a company like Baxter Healthcare, you know, when I need to do a night, I do a night. Actually, I quite enjoy it. I quite enjoy, I don't like to do a lot of it, but if something needs to be done, I go and do it, and I quite enjoy wandering around a factory at midnight. It's a whole world of its own. And night shift people are always wonderful people, charming people, and very grateful for anything they get, because, you know, they've really got the dead shift and they miss out on lots of things, and it's good fun. But I try not to do that too much. I don't go into a company promising the world, saying, I will meet your three shifts. I will meet your day shift, your afternoon shift, your night shift. I will meet day shift, afternoon shift, no problem. And I'll do some work with the night shift if it's needed. Or catch them at the other end, going at 6 o'clock in the morning. So you need to, I think if you're going to really meet the needs of the company, you need to be prepared to be flexible about that. And if you're going to do that, you need to have a really supportive manager, because if you're going to meet the needs of industry and be flexible and pop in at 11 o'clock at night, your TPD, which is the TAFE system where your hours are reported on, but the hours that you work are captured, well, you're going to be working different from what's on your TPD, or what you're supposed to be working. So you need a head teacher who you can have a conversation with, say, I've written it in my diary, I've documented it in my diary, that's fine, so you're not going to be here to 2 o'clock tomorrow. You know, you might have a teaching in the morning, I'm not going to be in to 2 o'clock tomorrow, and that'd be fine. Now, it sounds like a very basic thing to say, but when we first moved into workplace delivery, that was a lot of the battles that were basically fought, you know, those sorts of issues and conditions. So, how do you know you're doing well? How do you know your program's successful? One slide ahead. It's the next one. As Mickey said, you can't expect to be in a classroom situation. You might actually be working on the production line, practicing the English, not that you'll be working on the production line, standing alongside the production line, because the people can't come off the floor. You have to think of really creative ways of engaging and learning with your learners. It might be in the canteen. I often think how our TAFE classes, or whatever organisation you work for, you know, we do a class, we have 3 hours. We do a class in 3 hours. Well, I guarantee we do the same thing in half an hour in industry. It's like jump straight into it, this is what we're doing today, blah, 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 blah. Because you never have people very long, so you have to capture those moments. You know, the tea break for a quarter of an hour, you know, someone who's prepared to, you know, can't get them off the floor. So what am I going to do for the day? I can't get them off the floor. Okay, is it okay if I see you in the tea break? I'll come down to the tea room and we'll go through that there. Large organisations have a training room, but good luck if you can get it, because they're always booked ahead. Often it's the supervisor's office. Often it's on a computer in the supervisor's office, maybe looking at, you know, their emails or someone's emails or that kind of thing. But you do need a place you can go to, and when you go in and negotiate your program, you need a place that you can sit down, a place that you can put your handbag away. You need a computer. So if the workplace doesn't provide you with a computer, I mean, I always go in bargaining for a computer. I usually get one. If you can be on their email systems, that's great, because that's how you can communicate with everyone. That's how you can see what's happening in that organisation in another way. If you haven't got a computer on site, though, you need a laptop, because there's times that you cannot get anyone and you need to be able to use that time productively. Because one day in industry is about $1,000, so you can't be doing nothing. If the company's got well funding, they're not actually paying $1,000, but if they were paying all of it, it would be about $1,000. You need access to a phone, Okay, our last slide. How do you know you're doing well? So you need to be monitoring, you need to be evaluating, you need to be reflecting yourself on what you're doing, on what's happening. Your attendance at numbers is often an indication. If people were told that they can go, 10 people were told that they can go, and there's no reason why they can't go, and only 3 people come, well, it's probably because they don't like they're not engaged with the training or whatever. Feedback from employees is very important. I'm always stopping people in the corridor. How did that go? If it's not the person, their manager, the supervisor, your employee came to me this morning. What did they say? How did it go? This is what I did. Is this what's needed? Production results is a wonderful thing. If you can link your training to production results in any shape or form, it is fantastic. It is very, very powerful. And I recently had an example of that. In the manufacturing pharmaceutical industry, their documentation comes under the code of GDP, good documentation practice. They monitor error rate. The error rate was 16%, and they came to me and said, look, our error rate's 16%, could you do some training on it? Looked very carefully at what GDP was, which is, if you make a mistake, they put one line through it, it has to be initialed, it has to be signed, can't use whiteout. So that's what a mistake is in GDP. Very simple training. We ran one training session, and those error rates dropped from 16% to 3%. They loved us. We were there. It's just starting to rise again. It's gone up to 5%, so keep an eye on those sorts of figures. Gone up to 5%, gone back to the production manager and say, I think it's time that we hit it another way. We just did it very quickly before, been thinking about it. I think of, other ways that we could approach this. So that's what keeps you in industry, those sorts of, if you can be lucky enough to get onto those sorts of things. So of course there's assessment. You have to enrol in units, so your students have some kind of assessment. So that can be an indication of how well you are doing. But I really believe the clue to repeat business is that training needs analysis and giving that feedback to stakeholders and saying, this is what we've done, this is where it is now, this is where we're thinking it needs to go next. What do you think? What do you want to happen? And I believe that is the key. It's really easy to get stuck on general English or something like that, because a lot of employees, like in the aged care industry, a lot of your AINs in the aged care industry, like their literacy at very, very low level. You have a lot of African females working in that industry, very, very low level literacy, and you can get stuck on, well, I've got to improve their reading and writing, I've got to improve their reading and writing, when really, you need to work on the reading and writing they do need specifically to do certain tasks, but then you shouldn't be doing that 6 months later, that's still what I'm working on. You need to be doing your training needs analysis, clocking into key stakeholders in the industry and saying, is this what you want? Okay, a lot of chatting. I can see people are fading. I know you've had a long day. That's usually how I feel when I'm sitting down that end. Has anyone any questions or any more discussions?
How big are your 3-year programs with dollar funding and hours of the business?
Well, I know that very clearly because I'm doing the marketing role at the moment, but I can't give all our secrets away.
Mm-hmm.
A day in the workplace is usually 6 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
and it's got an hourly rate. How it's worked out, it's got an hourly rate attached to it. So, what was your question specifically?
Well, a 3-year program, are you talking about a $60,000 program?
Depending on how many days a week. So one day a week, I'm just guessing, kind of one day a week might be, maybe 30,000 or something like that, and industry will pay 25% of that the first year. It doesn't just roll over to 3 years, you've got to put in an application for year two and year three. The company have got to meet all the requirements that they need to meet. Any other questions?
You know, you said that you had to have a computer and fire in the space. What if that's not available? Does that mean you can't do it?
No. No, it doesn't mean that at all. No. But that's what I go in and negotiate, because I know I can work better in industry with those things. And it's horrible if you've just got nowhere to put your handbag. Like, you've got to have somewhere, minimum, to put your handbag and sit down and be able to, you know, write something. Yeah. Yeah. I don't go in two no's, hard no's. You go and say, this is what I'd like, you know.
Yeah, as far as the opportunities in workplace language and literacy, you were saying earlier that you thought funding was decreasing, things were getting tighter rather than expanding.
Not necessarily, not for well funding. There's a good size New South Wales bucket. Each state has their own bucket. There's a good size bucket. I think the need for LLN in industry is very highly recognised. I'm sure, you know, Sue could probably almost give us the figures of what they are at the moment, but I've read a lot in the media lately, and you might have too. So the well bucket, other buckets might be shrinking, but the well bucket is there for people. But you can't just go and get it. You need to be partnered with a industry to access it.
And increasingly, I'll just chip in back in. Increasingly, a lot of that money is going, being allocated by the industry field councils.
Yes.
And that seems to be a trend that's going to continue. Because in the recent budget, the federal budget, there was a whole bunch of money for resource industry and other things, and that's all going to go through the industry field councils. So a relationship with them is very important as well as the enterprise.
In fact, I think each industry skills council has got a well person.
No, there's
no.
Six.
Six,
isn't it? Yeah. Then funding six for next year. Can I add an extra bit to the previous question? So what would be the opportunities for a young teacher who has completed a diploma level TESOL course to move into the industry?
Well, of workplace delivery, they'd have to be attached to they'd have to be working for an RTO that does workplace delivery, basically, or be an RTO themselves. but more likely to be working for TAFE, or TAFE's not the only one, you know, or AMES, or a registered training organisation that does workplace delivery. And if you're a young teacher and you're, you know, working at a college level to begin with, and you say that you're interested in workplace delivery, very much sought after skills.
So it is possible, without experience at that stage, to actually move in?
Everyone has no experience at some stage.
Yeah.
So normally, we have different ways of taking new teachers in. Often it's a buddy situation. You go and you work with someone who has experience. Or sometimes you have a program manager who goes in and manages the program and does all the stakeholder stuff, the hard stuff, and it's quite easy to move it if you haven't got experience to move into industry, if you're just told what you've got to do, basically, you know, if someone else is doing all that part for you. So.
I might add that Irene's
hi,
was
Desiree.
in that role too for I'm from the SWISI Institute as well, Southwestern Sydney Institute, and Irene probably told you at the onset that she's now acting in faculty, the world position, world project manager, but even in your other role as head teacher, you've project managed a lot of other world programs and sort of mentored less experienced teachers.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so that part's actually my passion. I've got a funny role at the moment. It's half marketing, half setting up programs. It's setting up the programs and mentoring teachers that I'm really, really interested in, most interested in. Okay, come on.
Just
things I don't quite understand is, I mean, the WELL programs seem to have been consistently seen as, you know, a successful program generally.
Yes.
And we currently have, you know, the Australian Industry Group saying, you know, there's huge literacy and numeracy problems in the workplace, and we've got to do something. We've got to do something different. We've got to run discrete literacy and numeracy programs, etc., etc. Is that because industry is not taking up the WELL program opportunities enough, because they don't know about it, because the WELL funding doesn't go far enough, or is there a some constraints around the WELL program that doesn't address certain types of issues in the workplace? Can you elaborate?
Well, it depends who's delivering the WELL program, whether it meets the needs of industry, but I just see the WELL program as a magnificent umbrella that you can do absolutely anything under. So I think, you know, some WELL programs aren't successful because people haven't got the right skills. They go into industry without the right skills. I think there's, at the moment, it changes, but at the moment I think there's no shortage of funds in the WELL bucket. But I think getting industry to even know about WELL, it's a hard product. It's a hard product to sell. You go in and try and explain to an industry what WELL does. It's very, very hard. So I think there's that mismatch between industry not really knowing about the potential of WELL and the amount of funding that is actually there.
And they've got to pay. They do have to pay.
That's true.
And wouldn't you say to
the other issue
is a smaller
small company.
Yeah.
Very hard.
And they could partner with other companies, but most RTOs just sort of aren't prepared to take that on because it's really, really messy stuff. If you've got, you know, a few shops under the same submission, it's really messy. So I think it's about getting the word out there, and I think the Industry Skills Council and the WELL people, but the WELL people in the Industry Skills Council are fairly quiet. I mean, I'm going to meet one next week. Or,
They
want your contact, yeah. They want your, it's true.
They give it back to you.
Mm.
Mm. So that's what's going on.
Another question down there?
I'm wondering about the federal election.
It did. It existed through the Howard cabinet.
What would be the opinion of world teachers of volunteers working in the workplace?
Look, the world teacher, the problem is not the world teacher, the problem is the industry. You've got the organisation, you have to respect the organisation. Their corporate business isn't teaching training. And you couldn't take someone into a company without the company's permission, and a lot of companies wouldn't.
Sorry, I've phrased that wrongly. What about when the industry approaches a community organisation like my own and asks for a tutor to come in?
As a volunteer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that what's happening?
That's why I'm asking about how do the teachers are going to do this.
They have to cover you for insurance and accidents and all those things.
So
is that using WELL funding?
No.
Why wouldn't you suggest WELL funding for them?
How?
They want something free.
And usually it's one to one.
Yeah, and it's really partly up to you. You've got to think about what that person might get out of it by getting that experience, you know, as well. So, any other questions at all? Okay, well, thank you very much, and we'll leave it there tonight.
Well, thank you very much, Irene.
Oh.
I just put something on.
Thank you.
Us,
thank you very much.